What you doing, drinking today?
No, you're about to go to the lake.
Oh, I'm jealous. You got Trouty with you?
Yeah. Where is the restroom?
Damn.
Good morning, Sweet World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Thursday, June 24th. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling with the homie, Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, Tass? Got my Top Shot hot boy. Was just watching some cool deer calls. Trey Kirby. The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
Finally, the man making the magic happen is J.D.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team for joining us live right now on YouTube. Smash that like button, leave your comments, and subscribe. Keep sending in your questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. And go grab your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com. Immaculate items, always available. Yes, I'm in a new location here this morning. My power went out over in the neighborhood, so I had to quickly panic, scramble. Hey, my buddy Grish, can I use your office to record a podcast with my buddies talking about hoops? Yeah, no problem, man. So he's got some cool art up behind him when he sits in his office here. But yeah, somebody just took out a utility pole, just straight like wiped it out. So it went boom about an hour ago, but we're okay. And the we'll test his Wi-Fi here. Off to a decent start. I feel like I like this connection better. Yeah. Maybe I even sound better in this. I think I might have to lease this office from him.
I love it. Is he still around right now? It'd be great to get Grish on here, have him, declare Hawks Bucks already over, get him to make some other predictions that don't come true in the future. Could be a fun segment.
He is here, TK, and I asked him right before coming in. I said, come on, give me a hot take. What am I taking to the guys? He said, douchebag sweep. He likes the Bucks.
Wow.
And this guy's insane.
There we go.
Crazy take.
That's on brand though, isn't it? Really, yeah. For Grish. Just 100%. Swerve.
It's a hell of a swerve. On today's show, we're going to discuss the stacked Team USA roster that's been announced. Thaddeus Young winning an award I didn't even know existed. Congrats to him, and the Celtics have their new head coach. But first, let's get into the game. Trae Young scores 48 points. Kaka! As the Hawks beat the Bucks 116-113 in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Lele, have at it, man.
I mean, there's something unbelievable yet totally believable about what Trey's doing out there, because he keeps on cooking and clowning his opponents. And I think Budenholzer, a bit like Doc Rivers and Thibodeau, probably think that he can't do what he's doing, or at least sustain it, or that the answer to stopping him is simply just put a bigger guy on him. I mean, every defender is basically bigger than him. But Trey, once again, basically dictated how this game was going to be played and eventually won by the Hawks, because offensively, he is the definition of a triple threat as soon as he crosses halfway. He can shoot, he can pass or keep his dribble. And if you don't put pressure on him, then you're giving him some seconds and some time to decide which of those ones he's going to choose to bust out. I mean, he has the unlimited range on the three. And look, there's a few heat checks in there, sure, but you live with those because, first off, he's shown he can make them consistently from that, Steph Dame range. But he doesn't just take those ones either. He does get closer in at times and takes those. But when he's feeling them, he's like, I've got this shot. And you have to trust him to take those right now. He has the ability to get into the paint seemingly whenever he chooses to. He's not afraid of contact. Had 12 free throw attempts last night, made 10. And the other part is that this part of his game, which I think has really stood out a lot in the playoffs, is his floater and his lob. It's difficult to tell those two apart sometimes, because he gets into the paint and sometimes you think, okay, maybe he's taken a bad floater here, and all of a sudden Collins or Capella just rise up and dunk it. So it was like a deliberate play. Or if someone like Bobby Portis is there and they sort of sit back, then he does just float it over his head. And the Bucks' perimeter defense last night, I mean, they stayed single coverage most of the time, continually went under screens, just giving him those shots, and he just decided, okay, when I'm ready to, I'm just going to cross over my opponent and get to the shot or the move that I want to make. And if he gets into the paint, as I said, the lob or the floater, but he also can hit that sort of bounce pass, that wraparound pass to a rolling Capella or whoever it is. And last night, the Bucks were just chasing him around, chasing shadows. 48 points on 34 shots, the four threes, 10 of 12 at the line, as I mentioned, and 11 assists. He contributed to 72 points of what the Atlanta Hawks scored. and he did whatever they wanted, because I didn't think the Bucks defense was either interested in really putting a lot of pressure on him, or they weren't able to put a lot of pressure on him. So Budenholzer going forward has to now decide what he's going to do. Trey isn't worried about Drew Holiday. We saw that last night. Giannis isn't going to defend him for many possessions, maybe once or one or two. PJ Tucker can't defend him. He's going to be way too slow. So it's going to be basically Drew or Middleton if it's that single coverage. I don't think Pat Connaughton's going to get a shot at him. And that's really not going to bother him. So Budenholzer is going to have to decide, okay, we're either giving up, you know, Trey going for 48, or they maybe trap him early, get that ball out of his hands, and rely or risk the other Hawks beating them. And if you're Nate McMillan, I think you're probably okay with that scenario right now. Trey's shown as well, like he saw in Game 7. He doesn't have to be like, I've got to score all the points. You know, if he's not feeling it and other guys are, the Hawks can live with that. And so an absolutely incredible performance, made even more so special, I think, by Trey busting out what is his most impressive playoff taunt. When he lost Drew Holiday there, got open, paused. I mean, paused for like an eternity in the NBA world, shimmied the shoulders, swish-bombed the three, paused again, and then just smirked at the crowd. I mean, it was like, you know, we always talk about in basketball how these athletes are super super special and quick. They can close out so quickly. He had time to basically say, I am just going to rub your noses in this, and then swished it of all things. And like my man Heavy D once said, I like the way you wiggle, you don't jingle, but you jiggle. And that's really what Trae Young did out there last night. Because the Bucks crowd...
Man Heavy D says.
But the Bucks crowd, I mean, they were obviously watching the first two rounds and they were like, we can't taunt this guy because he's going to kill us.
Yeah.
So we
yeah.
just have to basically enjoy the show. So I was just, you know, speaking of your buddy Grish, I mean, this game... absolutely can't be one of those ones. Anytime you watch the Hawks game, you can no longer say it's done in the first quarter.
Because
one thing I'll say about Nate McMillan, I think he deserves a lot of credit for this. His team plays 48 minutes. They play until the very end. We've seen that time and time again in the playoffs. But it starts with Trey. Other Hawks played well. Giannis played well for the Bucks, but this is all about Trae Young this morning. Mm-hmm. He was phenomenal last night. And,
can we stop calling it a shimmy, though? It's not a shimmy. It's not
what do you call it? I
agree.
Like you just said about Heavy D, the jingle. What did he jiggle or jingle? I can't jiggle. Even tell.
No. He said. He said, "I like the way you wiggle. You don't jingle, but you jiggle.
You jiggle, yeah. So when you shimmy, you're jiggling the cleavage. It's front to back.
Front.
That's a shimmy. Mark Jackson shimmy front to back. Mm-hmm. If you're going up and down, like that's a shrug."
Up it's not
down.
A shrug.
It's not a shrug
we're
either.
We're not calling it a shrug either. No way.
We already got an NBA shrug.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Yeah. But it's up and down. It's definitely more of a shrug. A shimmy's front to back. It's cleavage shaking. It's jiggling.
I disagree. I think it's a shimmy. I think it's his shimmy.
I think
it's
it was up, a one-shoulder shimmy because the other one doesn't do anything. It's more the right shoulder that he somehow just, without moving the left one all that much, had going.
John Schumann's got it right. It's a shiver. It's Trae Young. He's ice cold. That's a shiver right there. Right. I would have gone with the sigh because it feels like he's, what did he say? He's like, I had a lot of time, like a lot of time out there. So I took a deep breath. I was thinking sigh because it feels like he's almost exasperated, like leaving me open again.
Yeah.
But that has a bit of a negative connotation. I love shiver, to be quite honest.
Yeah, let's go with shiver. With shiver. That's good. That's good.
Was that even his best play, though, from game one of the Eastern Conference Finals? Like, it may be throwing a lob off the backboard to Collins and maybe that, you know, nice behind-the-back dime. I think it was to Herter there for three earlier in the game. TK, is there another one I'm forgetting? What was Trae Young's, like, most iconic play from this game? There's, like, four, it feels like.
The most iconic play is 100% the shiver, but this was this kind of highlight tape that I made everybody in my family watch. Laura, once she finished with Real Housewives last night, I'm like, you have to see this, and you especially have to pay attention during the third quarter, because, like, the string of plays that he had was incredible. He had the alley-oop off the glass to John Collins in the playoffs, in traffic, incredible stuff, looked super smooth to the point where you're like, did they just do that? And then they're like, oh, yeah, we practiced that in a preseason game years and years ago. And then they pull it off in game one of the finals. Amazing. Next time down, Trae Young gets, I think he gets Drew Holiday with a nasty crossover to eventually get to a floater that he shoots off one leg, kind of puts it up right-handed. That one was, like, so Allen Iverson to me, watching the way he got open on that. And then I think he had another take to the middle that was a floater. And then he had the shiver shake for the three. It was just he had the crowd eating out of the palm of his hands, despite the fact that they were Bucks fans, man. That was it's fun to watch. Like, I don't know, he's just such an entertainer right now. He's gotta be the most watchable guy in the playoffs. Like, Devin Booker's been killing as well, but yeah. Trey's doing it to the next degree, right? Bringing in the taunts and, I don't know, all of his baskets almost feel like backbreakers, and just the mastery he has in the pick and roll is crazy because everybody's like, oh, Mike Budenholzer, this guy never makes adjustments. He did. He went to Giannis at the five to close this game. I was thinking PJ Tucker, where's going to be his spot in this series? But Trey was so good in the first half that they had to go away from the drop coverage. And that honestly killed the Bucks because Collins and Capella went wild on the glass. Yep. So I think Brook Lopez has to play more in game two. He was instrumental in that Nets series. He basically won them game three, challenging Bruce Brown at the rim. Won them game seven, huge block on Kevin Durant. Mike Budenholzer, he adjusted too soon. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I hear you on the Brook. The only difference with obviously like blocking Brown at the rim or even that Durant one that he gobbled up, which was huge, and he was awesome in game seven, is like, it's just Trey, he doesn't go all the way to the rim. Like, that floater is just cash right now. It is so pretty to watch when someone has that going. I love it. I absolutely love the floater. And you almost, like, you got to assume more guys got to start adding that to the game. And I think they have been over the last couple of years. But Collins, another monster game, like you said, TK, and Capella, huge. I mean, Capella, what? The offensive rebound was like the deciding bucket, really. When Giannis was at the five, and just down the stretch, they were getting every offensive rebound. There was one where they got two straight, and that resulted in the Collins three-pointer, which has happened for the Hawks in this postseason before. I remember another game where they got an offensive rebound, and it ended in a Collins three-pointer in the corner. And then, yeah, that Capella one there was a second-chance layup. Five offensive rebounds, Tass, in the last 4 minutes. So Trae Young getting all the headlines, but those two big guys, Capella and Collins, were awesome. Again, they continue to really, really impress a lot of people. What does Bud do? Do you think what Trey's saying is the right strategy? What, I don't even know what he does at this point.
Yeah, I think they got to just come out with a little bit more tenacity on Trae Young. Like, just be able to follow him around a little bit harder. And I know Brook drops every single time to the rim. That's his thing. But I think he's just got to get a little bit more into the floater space. You got to adjust. And the floater space is the lane, really. I mean, you just have to be able to cover some more ground. But it's really tough. If you come play him, yeah, you're likely going to get a lob on your head. But if you've got a little bit more tenacity from the point guard spot, whether it's Drew Holiday, I think they do miss Dante DiVincenzo a little bit here. Drew's got to come back and be ready to play with Capella a little bit. I mean, I think they just have to come out with a little bit more intensity. I think Brook is still going to play, even though, you know, he was bad in his minutes and the Giannis at the five looked better. But yeah, then they get hit on the offensive glass. So it's a tough combination of things happening here. But I think a good sign for the Bucks is that we're watching this Atlanta Hawks team and Trae Young and John Collins saying, why are people surprised? I mean, they just haven't been watching us all year. And it's true. I think that's part of it. This team is just really good and people haven't been watching them. But at the same time, I think the Hawks almost played a perfect game. And the Bucks have a lot of room to grow. While the Hawks, I'm not sure they did. They do after this. Like, Trey was ridiculous. Okay, he is playing at a level that's, you know, like every other great player in the league right now. Like, he's playing on a Kevin Durant level. I mean, he is just playing at a level that's so, so high. And then Collins had an 11 for 16 game. He's playing so perfectly, you know, going from that guy to rejecting a contract to a guy now just being a garbage guy, number one, getting those offensive rebounds, a key one in the last few minutes, and just picking his spots offensively. Like, that, going from a guy who argued with Trae Young and Lloyd Pierce in a film session about getting the ball more, and now he's just picking his spots perfectly to go 11 for 16. Even Herter contributed and Capella contributed. I think it worked almost perfectly. But on the other side, yeah, Chris Middleton just stunk. He really did. Kevin Herter outplayed him. And so I think there's a lot of room to grow there. Chris Middleton can get a heck of a lot better. But, we're sort of like, even us, as when we watch every single game, we all react. We're all reactive. And we're all wondering, is this Trae Young guy going to do this? Is he this good? Is he going to be able to take it to this level? Well, I think, he's given us the answer. He can be a superstar in this league, night in and night out. But does he have the supporting cast that the Bucks do? Are these Hawks players going to play this well every single night throughout this series? And are these Bucks players going to play this poorly, especially Chris Middleton, throughout this series and defensively? And I think the answer is probably no. I think the Bucks should still come back. Is it a douchebag sweep? No. But I think they do come back because there's just more room to grow. And the guys around Trae Young have to grow. Bogdan Bogdanovic is an issue because he is hurt. I mean, he gave you 4 points yesterday. I mean, if he's playing great, then maybe this is a different series, but I think he is hurt. So we're watching a superstar here. But it is a lot to ask of Trae Young to score 48 a game. I think that's going to come down. He was 1 of 7 in the fourth quarter. He was 1 of 7 on floaters in the second half. And so you're just asking him to do a ton. It's nice he can hide on defense in this series, but it was almost a perfect game for the Hawks.
They have figured out game ones, that's for sure. Now, 3 straight series where they go into the other opponent's barn and win. New York, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee. This is the other part. These numbers that he's putting up are against all great defenses. Like, the Knicks, the Sixers, and the Bucks are like some of the best defensive teams in the league, and he's just carving them up almost on a nightly basis, it feels like. He's had like maybe 1 or 2 sort of bad games at this point in the playoffs. Every other one's been a banger. But I'll say, when Giannis scored 6 straight points there, Lee, and then Drew Holiday, I think it was, splashed a 3. It was like a 9-0 run that turned a 2-point Bucks deficit into a 105-98 advantage. There's only like 4 minutes left. They're up 7. They're at home. You know, you've sustained what feels like the Trae Young avalanche. But then the Hawks scored the next 5. And then it was back and forth down the stretch. And Draymond Green was tweeting, actually earlier in the game, but it applies to that moment too. These Hawks are unbothered. And that's a great thing to have in the playoffs. It's actually a thing. That's what Draymond was tweeting about. What do you think about that tweet? I think there's a lot of truth to that because, like you said, they've come back time and time again. They do not get all that concerned. They're like, we can score in bunches because we might have the best offensive player left in the playoffs in Trae Young. Let's just get some stops and take care of the glass and slowly get back into it. They're not bothered.
There's no panic. You never sort of see anyone on the team sort of get super frustrated. They just keep on working and keep on grinding. And you mentioned there a couple of times, especially Giannis, I think, had maybe 3 plays in a row where he basically caught an alley-oop or just dunked the ball. And I think there's a lot more of that for Milwaukee because Giannis didn't touch the ball on that last possession, which ended in a Connaughton 3. But if you're Budenholzer, I think that's what he has to go to a little bit more. Just get Giannis going into the paint. But for the Hawks, and Trae, he said it after the game 6 victory in Atlanta and the game 7 victory in Philadelphia. He was just like, you know, we just hang in there to the end. No, they lost game 6, didn't they, actually? Yeah. Sorry, it must have been game 5. Anyway, after game 5 and game 7, you know, he just says, we just hang in there to the end. And it really does feel like that they don't sort of go away from what they're doing. They don't sort of take bad or rushed shots. They keep their offense going. Sometimes they go in, sometimes they don't. But everyone works hard. And again, John Collins, he's becoming like a fourth quarter John Collins, you know, always making impactful plays, whether it's defending shots, contesting shots, keeping the ball alive offensively. And he knows, he seems to hit that big fourth quarter 3 all the time. So,
yeah,
you know, they are certainly all on the same page right now. Lou Williams last night, for example, didn't get a whole lot of minutes, wasn't doing all that much. So he didn't really stay on the court. Nate McMillan went back to Trae Young, and Bogdanovic is definitely a concern. There's no way.
I couldn't believe he was out there half the time. There was a part where Middleton just like, he just walked by him. the guy can't move.
You have to wonder about his status going forward because they have to get him right because they can't have him out on the court there where he's not really contributing. And I mean, Solomon Hill came off when Trae was on the bench. Solomon Hill had a big dunk out of nowhere.
Weird people dunking last night. Yeah. Like, Drew Holiday had 2 dunks,
2 left-handed dunks. So that's certainly an area of concern here for the Hawks at how much depth they've got because their bench is thin anyway. And they need Bogdanovic, I think, really to be able to give them something because he can also handle the ball when Trae does sit if Lou doesn't have it. So that's certainly an area of concern. But ultimately, you know, Trae only played 41 minutes last night and Nate McMillan didn't sort of leave it too long when the Bucks were making a run. He pulled him back in and he just lets him dictate the offense. And I just didn't feel that Milwaukee at any point was like, okay, let's really put him under pressure. It was almost like keep going under screens. And once he shook a defender, so many times you saw the defender just basically give up. And that just leaves then Trae with so many options of that 3 to go to the floater. He had that the behind-the-back layup there last night when he was sort of trapped in the corner. So he doesn't panic. And that, I think, you know, that is why that sort of filters through to the rest of the team. The guy with the ball is going to make the right decision, and he often does, because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't go for the hero ball. He's more than happy to trust his teammates when they're there, but he also takes a shot when he's open. So it's just been incredibly impressive this entire run in the playoffs and since Nate McMillan took over.
Yeah, wasn't it Budenholzer at the, I guess, end of the third quarter when they do the quick little coach interview with Stephanie Reddy? Didn't he sort of allude to, Bud was like, I mean, he's asked about Trae Young, I think, and he's like, well, he almost was like, well, we can't stop him. And it was the classic, we just got to worry about everybody else. Like, let's just take care of trying to prevent everybody else from scoring. Am I crazy, or that's sort of what he was like admitting to some extent? And maybe it's the right strategy. If it's Trae going for his 45 to 50, okay, but you can't let Collins go for 23 and Capella own the glass and these other guys. Bogdanovich obviously didn't do anything because he
couldn't
barely
be playing. That's on Drew Holiday, though, right? Like, yeah. I mean, Drew Holiday was getting straight up roasted, and that guy was all defense this year. He had a great offensive game, but like you're saying, with that Solomon Hill take, that was on Drew Holiday. Just weird. It just seemed like he wasn't completely tuned in on the defensive end of the game. So, yeah, he's got to be better. He's got to be more physical. That's really what changed the series with the Nets, was when P.J. Tucker got all up into Kevin Durant, started fouling him every time down the court, but you can't call it. That's what Drew's got to really do against Trae Young, because, like you're saying, Taz, what did he finish? 1-for-7 on floaters in the second half, you said. But that leaves the rebounding there for Collins and Capella. I think Brooke Lopez played 8 minutes in the second half of Game 1 here, and in the second half of Game 1, Collins and Capella combined for 21 rebounds.
Yeah.
That's how, I mean, you're not stopping anybody. You're at that point, yeah, you're not getting a Trae Young floater, but you're giving 2 points up on a rebound putback or something like that, or an alley-oop. There are other ways to score, so yeah, I mean, they didn't do anything. The Bucks didn't do anything to take away Trae Young last night, and then they still got crushed on the glass. That's why I think they got it. Lopez needs to be out there again. He was a huge part of the reason they won Game 7 against the Nets. He could score inside. Maybe he could draw some fouls on Clint Capella, get him out of the game, because Capella was awesome again last night. So, I don't know. The Bucks just got to have a little bit more ferocity coming in Game 2.
Yeah, I saw
that. That's what happened in last series as well, where we saw Trae crush everybody who tried to guard him in Game 1 against Philly. Ben Simmons came out in Game 2 and really changed things. And Trae was off. And that's what you got to do. I mean, Trae is, yeah, super-duper comfortable out there if you give him space. And, yeah, Drew looked old. I mean, he's more of a physical guy than a quick guy, for sure, on the defensive end. But he's got to be all over Trae. That's got to be his one job. He's got to be, you know, face guarding him, for lack of a better defensive game plan. Just be all over him. I mean, that's got to be it. Because you can try and speed up Trae a little bit, like it happened in the Sixers series in Game 2 and Game 3 that they came back and won. Trae's not only, you know, hitting all these shots and comfortable and getting everybody involved and feeling good, but he's also running the show. Nate McMillan said after this game that starting last series, Trae is calling most of the plays because he's just reading everything so well. And that's his job. Nate McMillan's getting the heck out of the way. You know, he's being a guide, but he's also letting Trae decide when he gets into the lane, floater or huge dunk on you from Capella or from Collins. Like he's playing everything really, really well. So it's time for Drew to get in his shorts a little bit. I mean, that's got to be job number one. And then, yeah, the back line's got to be up there as well. But yeah, it's then you put the onus on Collins and Capella and all that. And I think that's what Bud was saying. He's like, yeah, I don't know. We got to stop all the other guys too. So it's a problem. It's a problem. I mean, this team is just it's developed. You know, since the beginning of the playoffs, Collins wasn't that guy at the beginning of the playoffs, but now he's found his role as a really nice complimentary player. And Capella's going to do his thing. And Kevin Huerter, again, I mean, he was solid too. Just solid enough. So they're flying.
Could we see Bud go with the old Nick Nurse box one defense like they did Van Vliet on Curry? And just try and have Drew completely stick to Trae Young and give it
try
a go.
Try it, but it won't work. I mean, Trae's just too quick with his little hesitations and things like that. He shook off anybody last night. And that's where I think the problem is. For as great as Drew is, and he's fast, and he's, you know, a little bit smaller than some of the other bigger guys, Trae has the ability to just get to the position he wants to get to. I mean, you just saw it time and time again. And if they are going to continually go under those picks and that other defender is going to stay back, then you're just giving Trae a canvas to paint whatever he wants to do. So, I mean, it's just that's the problem for Budenholz. I don't think there is an easy solution out there. I mean, no. Again, if you want to trap him, fine. But that leaves, you know, Kevin Huerta, John Collins, and I mean, if Bogdanovich can stay on the floor, you've got the shooters or Gallinari. So I think the Hawks would also, you know, they can play that strategy as well. So there's some questions here for Budenholzer. But again, it was only a 3-point game. So it's not, I certainly don't think the series is over by any means. But no. But Trey, you know, it was like the first game of the Sixers series after the Knicks. It was like, I'm surprised the Bucks weren't a little bit more aggressive early on trying to disrupt Trey. They sort of let him get going. And once he does feel comfortable, then the game's in his hands, and proved it again last night.
Oh, thank God for Trae Young in this game. Otherwise, this would have been like a 25-point blowout in the first half. I mean, it was like he was doing everything for the Hawks to keep him in it. At times, it didn't even have the feel like of a playoff game. Definitely not an Eastern Conference Finals game. But thank God he was just floater after floater after floater, keeping them in it to the point where it was a very close game down the stretch and a little back and forth affair. Anything to add to this one, TK, before we get to some other news in the NBA?
I liked what John Collins said about Trae Young's oop off the glass. He said, "Trey's a bold dude, to just be frank with you." What a strange way of saying that. Trey's a bold dude, to just be frank with you. I appreciate the frankness, though, from John Collins, because throwing an oop off the glass in the playoffs, that's A1 bold from Trae Young. And just a hilarious way to put it. I thought Collins was pretty funny on his Inside interview last night. Charming guy. And I think he said it was his first time getting the Inside interview, right? I mean, he had the huge three, had a huge game, so obviously they're going to want to talk to him, and he made the most of it.
I think he used the word, to be frank with you, twice in two different quotes, because I read it in two different places.
Wow. Double frank.
Today in the AJC, he's just being frank. And he said, like, people don't watch us, to be frank. You know? Like, that's true.
To be frank. Frank Collins. No,
thank you for being so frank. I think one little thing, I mean, Lee alluded to it. Giannis needs to be front and center. I think that's the issue with Bud is he gets everybody involved, and that's the thing. But nobody really had it going there the last few minutes. And after Giannis, you know, had one of those sort of Red Rover dunks where he's like dribble handoff and the guy who comes and gets the ball and him just sprint to the hoop, like Red Rover, I'm dunking on your ass. Like, that's what it is. It's like him and Drew or him and Middleton, we're just coming to the rim. And so he got that dunk, and then he didn't touch the ball for three straight possessions.
Yeah,
it was the Pat Connaughton air ball three, which was strange. Why? I don't know.
Who moved the mound back on that one?
and then there was the Drew Holiday missed layup where he didn't want to shoot but got it back and hit the front of the rim. And then there was another Chris Middleton in and out, which he had a rough, rough night. But three straight possessions. He didn't touch the ball. It's just, I know you want to do this thing by committee. And sometimes if Chris Middleton has a better game, then I think this is a blowout. It is. Right. But when it's not going, just give Giannis the dunky dunks. I mean,
hitting his free throws last night, too. So you weren't even that concerned. Like, if he got hacked, you're like, okay, he's not going to come down with some consistency. I don't know what he finished. If you got it in front of you there, Lili, when Giannis go from the line last night? It took him a while still when he got there. But
I know.
He was 6-for-8. Six for eight. So that's fantastic.
That's the problem with putting him at the five, though, too, is that just he's going to – if he's at the five trying to box out, block, rebound – be that back line of defense, and then he's got to go dunk and be the offensive guy. That's just a lot of work.
Yep, for sure. Middleton, he missed a potential tying three-pointer in the closing seconds there. He shot 6 of 23, like you guys said. He missed all 9 of his threes. This is the Middleton that I got, you know, upset with last series, early in the series, and then he turned it on, so he could do that. I think Stephen A. called him a walking roller coaster because of the highs and lows. I got a problem with that, though. Roller coasters are fun. So I was thinking, like, maybe an elevator. He's a walking elevator. There's a lot of ups and downs with Chris Middleton, but it's not all that exciting generally. I don't know if you got something better, TK. I couldn't think of anything better than an elevator. He's not a roller coaster. I'm not maybe a child's roller coaster. I guess those are sort of boring.
It's fun when he's hitting the game winners.
No, I know. No, I'm saying he's good, but it's like even when he's like pouring in 39 points, it's still Chris Middleton, I guess. That's what I'm getting at.
That's for maybe
he's got the perfect name, man. Chris Middleton.
Yeah. Good point. I don't know. What were you going to say, Tass? You have another idea?
Not a good one, no. I mean, I was thinking a walking escalator. Like, it's kind of looks interesting. And then you get on it, it's like, you know, you do get to the top.
Maybe it's the flat one where you sort of think, all right, I'll do this.
At the airport?
Yeah, but then you end up start walking on it anyway because it's like, come on, move quicker than this. You know?
Yeah, but that takes out the ups and downs.
I know, but that's,
in a series at least, when he can go for 6 of 23. And then would we be at all surprised if Middleton hits 6 threes in game 2, goes for 35, you know? Yeah. Like, no, you wouldn't because he does do that. He can score, but...
How about this from Belinda? This might be good.
Okay.
Chris Middleton is a walking Ferris wheel.
Okay.
Because he does go up. No doubt he goes up. And when it's up top, nice. Great views. Comes down eventually.
I like that more than a roller coaster because I like getting on a Ferris wheel, but I think I like the idea of a Ferris wheel more than when I'm actually on it. Right? It's like... I don't need to go around more than once. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
It's like, okay,
the
I've been
highs
up here.
Aren't as high.
It's true, too.
On a Ferris wheel. You know? Yeah. You're just there.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Okay. He's good a one. Walking Ferris wheel. Chris Middleton, a walking Ferris wheel is a great line. Okay. Let's hear your predictions for the rest of this series, though, in the stream team. Have you changed your opinion on this with the Hawks taking another game one on the road? Or maybe you were like Trey and Lee from the jump here, liking the Hawks to begin with. Let us know. We got lots of news. We're actually going to get into Is This News, but let's take our first break to hear from our sponsors.
Danielle has taken up painting. Oil painting, acrylic painting, other painting. I don't know what it is, but it's just incredible. If I can convince her to open up a Shopify store, I know she'll be hearing the... Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, just do it, to the first real life store stage, see, you made a sale, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? How about that? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap, offering outdoor outfits, or paintings, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From the all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Here's some information. Just like entrepreneur David Scott Martin of Antique Candle did for No Dunks on Shopify. How about that? And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/nodunks.
Back with No Dunks, time for a little Is This News. Yeah, Is This News. Going to throw a headline at you guys, and we will debate whether or not it's newsworthy. And the first one is by way of ESPN. Boston Celtics finalized their coaching deal with Brooklyn Nets assistant coach Ime Udoka. He is in. They've got their man. And by all accounts, he got strong recommendations, guys, from some key Celtics players there in Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, who all played for Udoka on Team USA in the 2019 FIBA World Cup. For those that don't know, he was a longtime assistant with the Spurs, and then he was on Philadelphia for a couple of years under Brett Brown, and then this year, last year in Brooklyn under Steve Nash. He also played. He was a decent role player in this league, a defensive-minded guy, and maybe that's what the Celtics are getting here. They wanted a young guy, Lee. And he's only 43, 44.
Yeah.
And obviously he has some relationships with their star players. And he does bring, I would think, a little defensive-minded toughness, I guess, to the idea of what they want to go forward with this roster. So Steven's got his man. What do you think?
Yeah, he did. Congratulations to him. And I think he has certainly paid his dues, Ime Udoka. And it's great to see he's getting an opportunity there on a good team. I think that's really important there. He's got some good talent. If they obviously have some sort of a relationship there with Brown and Tatum, I think that gets things off to a good start because they kind of know what to expect now from Udoka. As you say, I think the defensive-minded presence is what Boston's identity tends to be anyway. So he sort of fits in line with that strategy. And, you know, it's just always great to see another African-American man get a chance to coach, because we certainly tend to see a lot more Caucasian men get a chance first. So Ime gets a chance.
They get a chance first, then they get a second chance, exactly. Then they get a third chance, then they get a fourth chance. Yeah.
And, you know, so I think that's very important as well for our league to see other players who, again, it's all about, I think, you know, how long you've been on the sidelines and you've put yourself into these positions. Now you've got recommendations and you've come from the Greg Popovich coaching tree. So I think for Boston, it's a smart choice, and I wish him all the best.
What do you think, TK? Udoka in there for Boston?
Yeah, I think a smart move. I mean, who knows what Ime Udoka is going to be as a coach, but that's kind of the exciting thing, is to not see another retread. I think it's smart to bring in a guy who already does have a relationship with your mm-hmm. best players on the team, like you're saying, playing for that 2019 FIBA World Cup team. And, you know, I don't think it's a surprise to see the Celtics go from Brad Stevens, a non-NBA player, to an NBA player. That's tends to be the way that coaching decisions go, going from a not player coach to a player coach. So let's see if that little bit of locker room savvy has an effect on the Celtics, who kind of just couldn't get on the same page together this year. They've got a lot of talent. They just need to be all pointing in the same direction.
Yeah, what do you think, Tass? We got Brad Stevens here now in the front office, making moves pretty quick. Obviously trading Kemba Walker and then getting their head coach there in Udoka. Anything to add?
Ah, happy for Udoka. You know, it's sort of got the flavor of a Monty Williams hire for me. Paid his dues, former player, role player, knows how to communicate with guys. Obviously, guys really, 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 really do like him. And here we go. Good luck to him. Hope he takes by the horns and goes. And he's been rumored to be a head coach for a long time. So it just feels natural. When he was named, mm-hmm. I was just like, oh yeah, he hasn't been a head coach, although he has been so important on benches for a long time. And like Steve Nash said, my assistant coaching staff is going to be very different next year, because I got a lot of guys who can coach, and then boom, there goes one.
Yeah, you're right. His name, it felt like any time there was a coaching vacancy, was always like on the short list that he was being looked at, Udoka. So he is now the Celtics' 18th, I believe, head coach in their franchise history. Yeah.
He's been in rumors for a knee a long time.
Very nice. Our next headline, The Athletic. The NBA will have new rules to limit foul calls on non-basketball moves. So just for those that don't know, league's going to train officials here to identify and, you know, properly adjudicate the following overt actions that we sometimes see initiating contact with defenders. Okay, when a shooter launches or leans into a defender at an abnormal angle, when a shooter kicks his leg up or to the side at an abnormal angle, or when an offensive player abruptly veers off his path, you know, sideways, maybe backwards, into a defender. Tass, is this news? They're going to try and crack down on this.
It's good news. It's good news for all of us. Will it make a difference? I hope so, but it's about time. We've been talking about this forever. The big mm-hmm. one, yeah, you went through the three, but the big one, which has made me and everybody else squirm on our couches for years, is when a shooter launches or leans into a defender at an abnormal angle. So when he rockets, it looks like he's horizontal with the floor just to make contact with the guy for no reason at all. It's not because he's shooting the ball, but because he's just drawing a foul. And what could happen, apparently, when, you know, we watch guys do it all the time. Let's say Trae Young pump fakes, gets a guy in the air, he goes horizontal and rocks Matisse Thybulle's chest for no reason. That could be an offensive foul if they go that far. Will that happen? I mean, it just has to stop. It really has to stop. Refs may have to bring a little bit more subjectivity, and I think that's a good thing. They have to bring a little bit of basketball savvy, their point of view, instead of sort of letting the players dictate it. Like, it's gone too far, because every time a player falls now, there's a whistle. We saw Patrick Beverley a couple days ago when Devin Booker hit him in the face. There was no call. Devin Booker just went by him. But then Patrick Beverley hit the floor, decided this is a good time to hit the floor. And so they stopped play and decided, yeah, that's a foul on Devin Booker. The players are getting a little too much control, and they should do that. I mean, if you're you're giving them an inch, they're going to take a mile, and that's what's happening. But if the refs now take control a little bit in their direction, if the pendulum swings a little bit in their direction instead of letting the players dictate, I think that's a good thing. So I think this is good just to put in the bag of the refs, like to have them start to judge things a little bit differently, and hopefully they do. Like the other one's fine, kick your leg out, fine, but the biggest one is, now this has been going on forever. Paul Pierce was doing this. I thought he was the king of it really for a while. And now guys are just, they've put it in their arsenal. It's hard to watch that. So that would be great. That would be great. But I wonder, can the refs judge that? Do you guys think the refs can see that on the floor when it happens? I guess.
I don't know. Yeah. You honestly just made me a little bit more nervous about this because it seems like a great idea. I feel like for the first month of next season, we're going to be talking about overt actions on every single show. And now, Tass, if you're saying the refs are going to have more power, it sounds to me like more replay. So that would be worse. I would rather have these ugly fouls than go into replay more often because those are the two biggest issues. Weird fouls and dumb replays that take too much time. Things that slow down the game and take you out of the flow of the game. We don't need to give referees another rule. We don't need to give them more power. It should be more the players. They should just, we should be able to know right away if this is a foul. If this turns into more reviews because of this dumb stuff, then it's not worth it, I don't think.
I hope it's the opposite, like you're saying, TK. Yeah, I hope it's those guys that do the pump fake, be it whoever it is. There's so many guys. Of course, everybody points out Harden and Trey, and Chris Paul is the king of the stopping, like the almost going backwards, like when a guy's on his back. But just don't call anything. Like, let it go. Because the guy pump fakes and then does the crazy lean totally just to try and make contact. He's not really shooting it. And if they just call nothing, then likely he's not hitting that shot. It's probably an air ball, and maybe there's like an advantage to the defense there because they've done their part. Yeah, if we get into like, oh, wait, that's an offensive foul because it was overt or something like that, ugh, that could be worse.
Actions.
But it is funny, like Lee, like it truthfully just comes down to like, I know this sounds weird, but like sometimes you just know whether or not that was a real shot. Like that you leaning horizontal 10 feet over to try and make contact, that's just not natural. It's not. So I'm not going to call anything. And hopefully maybe that's how they try and adjudicate this.
And they made the rule adjustment with the rip through move a few years ago. Now you still do see that from time to time, but it's also pretty well called, I think, for the most time. You know, Kevin Durant still does it occasionally where they rip through and it's like, okay, that's not a shooting foul unless it's in the penalty, which I wish they would change that rule and make it never a shooting foul, even if you're in the penalty, because you can still kind of get away with it in that sense. But you see, I think it's going to be fairly easy to call for most of these ones when guys, you know, again, there's there, they get the guy in the air and then all of a sudden it's that move into the guy. And whether that's an offensive foul or I think it's better to just say, just let that one go then. If he's trying to create that contact and just giving up, because they almost never make those shots. So I think that's one way the game can almost eradicate it itself when players like, I don't get that call anymore. So there's definitely going to be a few little, you know, controversies along the way, but like it is with the rip through still. But I think at least the league is addressing it because it is ugly as anything to watch. And as much as these players we love to see, you know, Trey, we don't like seeing it when he sort of does that stuff as well. So I hope that it is a first step towards, you know, getting rid of that from the game.
What did you guys think about the play last night where Giannis ends up hitting Trae Young in the face? But it's after the shot, sort of, right? I mean, it's a shot.
Sort of.
He comes down, and he's down. The shot has been taken. And then Giannis does slap him or accidentally hits him in the face. So how are you calling that one officially?
That shouldn't have been a shooting foul in my mind because it was the ball, I think, almost hit the rim before Giannis even made contact. And I think about this, if you think about that before the shot, you know how these days it's almost impossible to get an N1 unless you're like literally releasing the ball. Imagine he pokes him in the eye and then you have like a 2 or 3 second delay and then he shoots it. There's no way they would give him shooting fouls, free throws on that.
Right.
He would have
been
side out.
Floor.
So So it should have been the same. I was very surprised. I think everyone, Reggie was on the call, was very surprised that they were giving him free throws on that because it was well after he released the shot.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully, I guess there is concern that this lasts for a month or two and then it sort of starts to dissipate. But maybe the players, like some of you have said, like stop doing it because they're getting no calls, or even worse, maybe they are getting the weird rare offensive call because they're just throwing their body into a defender. Defense is already next to impossible to play in this league, so I do like the idea of like at least trying to help a defender that plays it well, is to the side, is challenging a shot, and then is not like still given a foul because the offensive player has just decided to like chuck his body into him. I mean, that makes sense. I think we all agree with that. So we'll see how they do here. Our next one. This is from Shams. This is just a straight up tweet. This guy's a machine.
Straight tweet.
Yeah, Team USA's 12-man roster for the Tokyo Olympics has been announced. JD, I think we have the tweet so we can show all the names. If we do, throw it up. If we don't, I'll just say them. Kevin Durant, Damian Lillard, Bradley Beal, Jason Tatum, Devin Booker, Zach LaVine, Kevin Love, Bam Adebayo, Draymond Green, Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, and Jeremy Grant sneaks in there. I think Harden was not a last second, but has ultimately decided not to go to Tokyo because of his hamstring. So Jeremy Grant gets the call. Trey, is this news? How are you feeling about your USA squad there?
Well, congratulations to the United States of America on another basketball gold medal. I thought it was going to be tough to get star commitments, and they got Kevin Dang Durant after lighting it up in the playoffs. Incredible commitment from KD. I saw Clutch Points mention that these 12 players are signed for $2.6 billion worth of basketball contracts. And the team's pretty stacked here. A nice mix of old and young. Kevin Durant, Draymond Green return from 2016. Those are the only 2016 players to make the 2021 team, which should be interesting, obviously, giving KD and Draymond's history. I also love seeing Kevin Love there as the old vet, the Carmelo Anthony of this team. His yep. first time back with Team USA since 2012. Kind of an audition for him, I feel like, for other NBA teams. Like, hey, Kevin Love, he's still got it. He's still making open threes and hitting the glass. That could be huge for his NBA career. And then I love all these new names we're seeing. Damian Lillard getting his first turn. He's going to be one of the major names on this team. And then Olympic debuts for Bradley Beal, Bam, Tatum, Booker, LaVine, Drew, Middleton, and Grant. They've got defense and versatility. Draymond, Bam, Drew, guys who can guard multiple positions. The last time Team USA played in a national competition, they sent Brook Lopez, Mason Plumlee, and Miles Turner. Yuck. Now we got shooting and scoring everywhere. But I am a little concerned. I wonder if some of these teams will change because there's a couple of Bucks that are on this team. And Devin Booker, obviously, yep. is on this team. They could go to the finals, both of these teams. They would play the Game 7, I think, is July 22nd. And then they've got yep. a plane booked to fly out on July 23rd. That's a big ask, but baller if they do it. The only guy I'm surprised to not see, considering the way the playoffs has gone, Trae Young. I mean, you would yeah. think Trae Young would probably get the ask over Zach LaVine, but maybe he said no because he's still going right now.
Yeah, those three guys, like you said, Drew, Middleton, and Booker, yeah, they said, nope, even if we're in Game 7, we'll be there. Because I think the first game is against France on July 25th on the other side of the world, so it would be a quick turnaround. Team so stacked, I think you could still win a game, even against France, who's a good international team, probably without some of those guys, because it would either be, well, two, one, or all three. I guess it could be if they're playing the Bucks and the Suns. But yeah, I think you're right, Trey. Like, we sort of thought, what type of team is going to be sent here? You know, is this going to be sort of a B squad here? And this is pretty elite tasks. I mean, especially with KD and then all the scores. Were there any surprises to you that maybe were on the list or not?
I just thought in general, yeah, the quality of the players here just proves how much of a priority it is to play for your country. And so that's clearly still high on the list for these guys, for them to say after all this that's happened this last year and a half and having a shortened offseason last year to still be feeling good enough to want to play. So I think that's the thing. There was a lot of complaining about the truncated offseason last year. So they could have easily just said, nah, I want some R&R, but it's important. I think they're going to do a good enough job trying to make it as leisurely as possible, like not as many practices, as few just as easy as it possibly can be. So I'm excited for that back line. I think is always interesting to watch in international competition. You don't need as much coverage from your center in international competition. You don't have to travel as far if you're Kevin Love, and so he could be important. I mean, just to be a huge body against some of those big international centers that they have that, again, are, you know, more back to the basket guys. But Draymond can chip in at the five, obviously, and you got Bam. So that's stacked once again, super stacked. Let's just get a USA versus the world competition going, make it a little bit more even. The Olympics, just Everybody band together. USA versus the world. Let's just do it at some point.
I'm a little pissed Melo's not on this team, if I'm being honest. Like, why not? Let him go for his fourth gold. He's the only one in history with three. I guess Durant could tie him here if he gets his third, which, again, with this team, he probably will be. You know, Jeremy Grant, sure. I like him getting the experience, but give me Melo there, Lili. Olympic Melo could still easily give you 20 in international play.
Ah, yeah, that would be a great farewell because he's got a...
that'd be awesome.
He's got a bronze medal too, I think, from 2004, yeah. I think yeah. It is. So I'm surprised Kevin Durant's going to get a silver medal this time because, you know, losing to Australia in the finals is an unusual choice. But listen, he makes these decisions from time to time. So, no, honestly, it's honestly when you see Lillard and Beal and Kevin Durant, that's great because it's, you know, there's still some other great players who could have made that roster, but this is a very, very strong team. So that is going to mean that if the USA loses, you know, it's not going to be like it was perhaps in 2019 where it was like, man, had Plumlee on that team. So it doesn't really count. So, and look, I think the international game, you know, you're going to, these other countries, as we've seen, they've played together a lot of the times together at different competitions going through the years. And it's always tougher than perhaps perceived. But the USA will be favorite. They will very likely win the gold medal. But I also think we're going to see some good games, some good battles there. So I'm excited for it.
Unless I have this wrong, this is Greg Popovich's Olympic debut as a head coach, as he took the program over from Coach K there too. So he's going after his first gold medal as the head coach.
Yeah, because he was on the bench in Athens.
Yeah, that's right. So he's taking over now. So maybe maybe that had a small part in some of these guys committing to it and going over there. So can't wait. Love the Olympic game. Love the international play. It is fun. And you're right. I think they're going to win the gold medal, but some of these teams, these international squads, are actually legit good, and maybe they're in it for a half or whatever. And maybe, hell, maybe they shock the world. We'll find out.
Who's the second best team in the world right now?
Right now? Yeah.
Serbia, maybe.
I was going to say.
Jokic isn't playing, though, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's There's right. so many where guys are not playing, so it does
Slovenia.
Change the equation.
Slovenia might be good there with Doncic has said he's playing for sure.
How does the Australian team look? I know Ben Simmons is not playing, but how does it look over? Are all the other guys, are Mills in, Ingles in?
Yep, all those guys. I'm not sure if any of the younger guys like, Giddy or Josh Green will play, but Bainsey will probably play. Bainsey plays incredibly well for Australia too. So we've been so close to a medal in the last two World Championships and Olympics and been stiffed every time. So maybe this is the time we're going to get through, break through.
All right, final headline here. I'm still not convinced this is actually real, guys, but NBA.com says the Bulls, Thaddeus Young, wins the 2021 NBA Hustle Award. Trey, you're pumped. Did you know this was an award?
Oh, of course, Skeets. I'm a big hustle fan. You know, I love getting dirty out there. What a day for the Bulls yesterday. They lose the number 8 pick in the draft lottery, follow it up with Zach LaVine getting named to Team USA, and this major award, the last major award of the NBA season, Thaddeus Young, the 2021 NBA Hustle Award. My favorite part was the subheading on NBA.com that said Thaddeus Young led all NBA players in charges drawn and offensive loose balls recovered on a per-minute basis. We're going sicko deep on hustle stats for the Hustle Award here. And honestly, yep. Thaddeus Young, he was great for the Bulls in the first half of the season, playing small ball five, and he drew a lot of charges. I remember it.
Yeah, I did not know this was an actual award. It's been 5 years strong now. Thaddeus Young won it this year, but Montrezl Harrell last year, Marcus Smart the year before, Amir Johnson the year before that, and Patrick Beverley. He was the first Hustle Award winner, Tass. But I guess Thaddeus Young, he was like top 10 over the last couple of years, so it's about time he finally broke through and got it there on the per-minute basis. Like, John Schumann come up with this stat? Like, did John Schumann write this and come up with this award? Like, did you know about this task? In all honesty, I did not know this was a thing.
No, and I'm kind of glad I didn't. Not because it's, you know, undeserving award, I guess, but just so I get a little bit of distance from the NBA game. So I'm not a huge NBA sicko where I know that the winner of the NBA Hustle Award is the inaugural one was Patrick Beverley, followed by... If you told me that Thaddeus Young had won it 5 years in a row, I would have believed you. I totally would have believed you. Yeah. But yeah, and I guess it has been 5 years since they put in those hustle stats on NBA.com, approximately, maybe, yeah. You know, yeah. Putting in charges drawn, which it's cool to look at times, you know, deflections, yeah. Freddie Van Vliet's always in up there. But so is this, this isn't, a, was it a vote? Or is it a stat-based award?
I think it's just stat-based. Yeah. I think, yeah, the stats that they're going off of for this award, if that is how it's decided, charges drawn, deflections, offensive loose balls recovered, defensive loose balls recovered, offensive box outs, offensive box outs, screen assists, and then contested shots, both two-pointers and three-pointers.
Offensive box outs? Like you get a point for a box out?
I guess they track all this. So there's like leaders and like Thaddeus Young. I give you the breakdown. He was ninth in the league in offensive box out per 1 minute. That's my favorite part of all this. And then he was 22nd defensive box outs per 1 minute. Cool. Lee, anything to add to Thaddeus' big win here?
Well, if this was an award on our Wednesday night run in Toronto, you know, Sweaty Joe would win this in a romp. He was always setting screens.
Good
he was
screen
always boxing
assist,
out.
Man.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
What about Nelson? Give Nelson
some kudos. See, it's a close one. It's a
he'd
close
the,
one.
You got the rebound.
Don't sell yourself short either, Tass. You'd be in the running for this. You'd be the Thaddeus Young of this award, where you'd be like top 10 for 3 or 4 years and then maybe break through in that fifth year and get it.
Oh, thanks,
you're doing
man.
The dirty work out there.
Yeah, thanks so much. I got the BO. I got the box out and the body odor. Give me 2 points.
I don't think you're sweaty enough, though, Tass, as these other two, Nelson and Joe.
No, he's not even close.
Nah, those two guys are just like just dripping in sweat from like the first tip-off of the game, too. You know, it's just like some of those dudes.
Do you think tomorrow on NBA.com someone will win the Sweaty Award for the 2021 season?
Who would win it this season?
Yeah, who's the sweatiest guy in the league right now? You know, this is the – it's like named after Patrick Ewing.
Of course
it
is.
At this point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, who's the sweatiest guy? That's a tough one.
We've talked about somebody's jersey being drenched.
Well, that was James Harden, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, Harden was soaking wet at the end of the Houston tenure, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, that's for the stream team. Who would win the 2020-21 Sweaty Award? Who has the most droplets per minute, perspiration
drops
on their
per
face?
Per 1 minute. I would love to see a player come in to preseason next year being like, I'm taking home that hustle award.
Mm.
I'm coming out and I'm boxing out every possession. Just imagine like the focus. You're like who's a guy who could potentially win this? Seems to be bench guys generally, bench energy
Kyle
guys.
Kyle Lowry should be in there,
okay.
I think.
Kyle Lowry, imagine he goes from, I don't know, he's probably 120th on offensive box outs per minute right now. If he gets that up in the top 40s, most improved hustler.
Do you guys want to like we should make it a recurring like segment on the show where we really track week to week
who
is
got
the hustle leader. Like let's lean all
check
into
the box
this
outs
award. yeah
the big beef and the big hustle of the night. That's what
people are saying. Joel Embiid super sweaty, Middleton super sweaty, Jokic pretty sweaty. Yeah, these are all right. Dylan Brooks is a sweaty guy.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Especially, it's nice to find a smaller sweaty guy. You know, it makes sense. These big giants are really, really sweaty. But, people saying Harden, they're agreeing with us. Okay, keep them coming, guys. Let's take one more break here and hear from our sponsors before we get to Tweet of the Night. Yeah, back with No Dunks. Time for Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Well, Trey, you were a little concerned this morning that there were no good tweets last night. Did you find anything?
Gotta be honest, Skeets. No good tweets from last night.
Wow.
Absolutely zero. Message you this morning. You see any good tweets? You sent me a terrible one. Sent out a tweet to the people out there on Twitter. Any good tweets? No good responses. Maybe some ancient tweets. But luckily, the stream team hooked me up today because Magic Johnson is out and about. So this is Tweet of the Day. Magic Johnson, officially on vacation. And still working out, looking like he's on the deck of a yacht, just pumping iron.
Yeah.
Look at this. That's
look
living
the
life right there.
Him, man. Yeah.
He's in Greece. He said he just arrived in Greece, just off the coast there. So,
yeah, that looks like Mykonos, I think.
Okay.
Good beautiful stuff, Magic.
Nice hot yeah tub there.
Look at him just like, like, I mean, you like to blast a gram when you go away for sure, but he's like, hang on, I gotta get some dumbbells in here. I gotta do a workout and
but it's like a full workout set. Like there's yeah a bench
he's got a
with
bench
a
press there. That's amazing. Yeah,
guys, yeah. He's on a super yacht, man. I mean, this is yeah not that surprising. You never watch Below Deck? No. Boats are incredible.
You
man
think this is an episode? You think Captain Lee's gonna show up here for
oh my god, I hope so. If Magic Johnson is on Below Deck, yes. Yes. But he's looking good. Looking in great shape there. All right.
Yeah.
Got a good tweet there.
And I think in we would end all be smiling ear to ear, just like Magic is, if we were out, you know, out in Greece on a mega yacht, getting that pump in. And it looked like he had more than one pool in front of him. Like, it looked like there was a pool directly to the left of the bench press. And then another, like, hot tub just a few steps up there. So I don't know if it's kind of one of those things where you hop in a cold tub, hop in a hot tub, hop in a cold tub to really cool out, but he's living the life.
Yeah, Magic Johnson, just killing it, always killing it. All right, guys, we'll call it there for today's show. Thank you so much to the stream team for joining us live. Thanks to everybody for downloading and listening to the podcast. Thanks to my buddy Grish for hooking me up with this sweet office that I'm now going to lease full time. Do you guys want to like permanently record the show in here? We can just all come to his house every morning. It's got a kitchen. You know, I know that's the number one thing. So yeah, thank you him. I couldn't believe it. Power's still out, so I'm happy I made this decision because I wanted to talk to you guys about game one there with Ice Trace performance and all of those news. Email us your questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast, nodunks@theathletic.com. Tweet them in at nodunksinc, that's INC. You can also leave them in the YouTube comments below. We also see those, so don't be afraid to do that. If you don't have an Athletic subscription, go to theathletic.com/nodunks so they know we sent you to sign up for that.
Sorry to interrupt.
And finally, hold on, finally, go to nodunks.com, get all your immaculate items. Yes, go ahead.
Sorry, but there's breaking news from Tim McMahon. The Indiana Pacers have apparently re-signed Rick Carlisle.
Okay.
4 years, $29 million contract. So he's going back to where I think that was his first head coaching job in Indiana, I believe.
That sounds right.
He was a Pacer man.
Yep. Okay, Rick Carlisle. I mean, not a surprise. We especially when he left the Dallas Mavericks pretty abruptly there after the Athletic bomb there from Tim Cato and Sam Amick. It was like, well, he's going to coach somewhere else, right? There's all these openings. He's just going to try and decide where he wants to. Okay, Rick Carlisle to Indiana. We'll talk about it maybe in more detail on tomorrow's show. Game 3 between the Suns and the Clippers tonight. We're back in LAC. Any predictions before we wrap this up, Trey? Chris Paul, I think, is probable. He's very likely going to be playing in this game. No Kawhi Leonard. What happens here tonight? Yeah, try and make sense of it for me. Give me a prediction, big guy.
Clippers by 6. That's the picks. 22 threes for LA tonight.
Well, a bunch of three-pointers going to drop for the Clips. What do you think, Tass? Can the Suns extend their postseason winning streak to 10 games tonight? That's what would happen if they win tonight. What do you think?
I think there's a good chance. I just have a great feeling that there's never going to be a blowout in this series, and that's all I'm hoping for. Okay. I'm being selfish, but I think the first game got up to 10, a double-digit lead for I think it was like 30 seconds. It was really quick. No double-digit lead in game two. And these two teams, they should go down to the wire. That's for sure. The Clips are going to win one game. So let's hope it's game three. Let's cheer for them. We don't want a 3-1 series.
When was the last, like, crappy postseason game we've had in this playoffs? Like, you know, I it's been a good run we're on here with,
Bucks,
like,
Nets,
really
game two, maybe.
Two, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All the way back to them. That's not bad. Yeah. Happy with that. There's been a lot of close games. Lee, what's your prediction here?
Clippers steal one tonight. Yes, that's probably what we want this
steal
series to.
They shouldn't be winning it, and then they get it in the end?
I want the Clippers to win tonight. I want them to keep that series alive. So give me the Clippers by a bucket.
Yeah, just to peel back the curtain for everybody. It's around this point when you get to the Eastern Conference Finals and the Western Conference Finals that we want... As a team here, as a No Dunks team that does a daily show every day, you sort of want some long series. Because the last thing we want is one series to wrap up really quick and the other to keep going, which is great because we want like a 6 or 7 game series. But yeah, some sweep in the conference finals lately, then there's a lot of filling to do. Then we're talking about Rick Carlisle coaching the Pacers for 50 minutes on one show. You know, we don't want
exactly
that. So hopefully the Clippers make this an interesting series. But we'll see, man. Suns can't lose right now. 12. All right. We'll see you guys tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern here, live on YouTube. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And since we talked about the Olympics, I'm going to throw up stream teamer Mark M's comment. Team Canada versus Team Greece, June 29th. Coming soon.
Wow.
5 o'clock Mountain Time, 7 o'clock Eastern Time. It's always tough when Canada plays Greece. I don't know who to cheer for, but it's usually I go with Greece because they've got the better chance. Canada doesn't have one. Greece has. Yeah. Ole, el azule,
ole. They're playing in Canada, man.
Desta Madonna, tragudo pote. Yeah, even if we don't have a game in the Western Conference Final or whatever the schedule is, we can just come on and talk about this game. In Victoria, Canada, Greece. What a battle.
Fine with me. Embrace the day, people. You could stay.